Welcome to Under the Scales. We're in New York City, and I'm with two of my really great friends, Patria and Kelly. Now...
And Timo.
Well, I said really great friends. I'm with... There's another guy here, too, and his name is Tebow.
I'm going on a beer run.
We go way back. I think my funniest, best memories, even though we go way further back, kind of one like where we were definitely all together was India, right?
Way before that.
I mean, even Albany 97.
No, what about Europe 98?
Well, Europe was amazing. It was.
I mean, that's where I feel like it was solidified. This way, as many things were solidified.
I met you at the tour ending Albany 97.
That's amazing. Okay, you guys have better memories than I do. But probably the only one that's been photo documented, so I can sort of refer back to it, is India.
Yeah. You and Steve started your romance.
Yeah,
there.
That's right. Steve, dude
that
of life.
That was surprising
Steve
to me that you guys weren't like. Familiar or friendly.
It's funny you say that. Yeah, so the dude of life and I, one of Trey's goals was for he and me to become pals.
You just needed us
and
for
it,
that.
And yeah, it didn't really happen until you guys became the glue. It's like, hey guys, this guy is actually cool. And you were talking about me, of course.
Yeah. See, in my head, I thought you were saying that to you about Steve. But, yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, are we off the track already? No. Let's get back on track. So this is a Q&A. It's supposed to be a Q&A interview. However, judging by the pre-conversation where we should have had the mic on already, it's going to be anything but a Q&A. It might be like a reminiscence. Who knows? But anyway, I'm very happy to be here with Patria and Kelly. So we're in New York City. We're in Chinatown. All right. Do you want to start or should I start with one of the conversations we already had?
Let's just jump right into a question. It's just,
All right. It's okay. Q&A after all.
It is.
So you got to start with Q.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So... Hanny, this one is for you. I feel like we have a good idea how the songwriting process worked. You've covered that. In a nutshell, is that process fairly considerate? Is it pretty blunt? Are there awkward, funny moments where members have different styles or responses to what has been presented?
So members, I think they might think that I like write
You're
with,
doing it with the band, but it's just you and Trey.
But it's always just me and Trey. And so once that's clarified, by the way, isn't there some shitty music on that we can turn off?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Okay, thank you. as far as like being considerate of each other, it's, you know, after 35,
it's more about
40
the rejection
years.
Process.
Right, I like, see. So yeah. I bring an idea up to the table and am I worried about it getting batted down kind of thing. So that's one of the best things about a well-adjusted collaborators is that there's never any fear. You never think, like, does my idea suck? Mm-hmm. You just put the ideas out there.
Yeah.
You put the ideas out there and, you know,
so has there been something that you thought was like a sure thing that he was totally like, no? What were you thinking, Tom?
Are you thinking like Jennifer Dances?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting lead-in.
Well, it's a bad example because they're terrible lyrics. And
did you think they were terrible at the time?
It started kind of, that song has always been sort of a joke.
All right, how did that song
start as a joke?
Tell us how that came to be.
Funny thing is, before Amphibian was Amphibian, that's my band that kind of started in 1999, I drove up with my friend Matt Kohut to the barn, and Trey had another guitarist there, Dudley, and the four of us were going to form a band called U-Talk, and the only song we could sort of come up with that we could all play and practice was Jennifer Dances. And I think the fact that fact sort of killed the idea of the band. Because the song, didn't really...
Jennifer kills so many things.
Jennifer kills a lot of things. If I have an idea for a melody for some lyrics and bringing them to a writing session, if Trey grabs them, I won't tell him that, you know, my idea necessarily, because I want him to try his idea on me. And usually I'm happy and don't want to tamp down his enthusiasm, but there's times... For example, there's a song called Night that the dude and I did, but Trey and I wrote a version of it that just sort of, that one's kind of consigned to the scrap heap of Trey and Tom attempts. But I like the words enough that the dude and I later wrote it with my friend Anthony, and it turned into something great. Now, the weird thing about Trey. Yes, that one's on there, and it's also on a previous, it's on the Dude of Life Under the Scales as well. Which was probably...
Then I've heard
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you've heard it. So that's the one about, you know, night versus dark sort of thing. Soon the torrent floods my brain, heals the weak but numbs the sane. Close your eyes, it soon will pass. Darkness rules, again it lasts. So that's why I prefer the squinting in the light. The hues to me are just as bright. I see them with my second sight. But one of the things that you have to know about Trey is he doesn't forget a song. And this came back and bit me in a weird way recently, which was also I told about on a recent podcast with the guy Garrett. The prisoner. I wrote lyrics for a song that Trey eventually came out with on Big Boat called Running Out of Time. But because he and I wrote it together and then I thought he was doing nothing with it, I really liked those lyrics, and I created a song out of it called Thunderclap with my band Amphibian. Little did I know that when a Fish album came out, boom, Trey would take a 16-year-old song and bring it back to life. Similarly, I just heard his version of Night, and it's really good. It got better.
And Trey band version?
It's a potential, I think, for a Fish song, but I'm not positive if it's going to make it into Baker's Dozen.
Speaking of, your 300 club... First night of the Baker's Dozen will be my 300th show.
Oh, come on.
Not even kidding.
The most amazing thing is I don't even have to ask the question anymore.
I listen to your podcast.
You guys self-ask that question now. So Kelly...
It's a big deal for me.
You're going to be welcomed into the 300 Club. Mm-hmm. And so we have to have a big party.
And then the fourth night, July 25th, is my birthday as well. So
300
it's
plus
going to be a
fun
four-night run.
That's almost too much.
It's... Almost not too much because I'm actually doing all of them, but I'm most excited for the first four nights.
Patria, how many shows? And don't say I don't know, because you're the type that like would claim that you don't know, but you do know.
I literally don't know.
She doesn't know.
I literally don't know. I know there's an app for it, and
there's an app for that.
I was keeping up a couple years ago, and
last time you were keeping up, where were you? Give me a number. You got to give me a round number.
I don't know. I can't remember if it was like 120 or 170. I have no idea.
Okay, so you might be approaching 200.
But I also, like, in a Fish show, like, I don't even know, like, what song we're in. Like,
true story. She'll be like, Kelly, what song is this? Like,
still, well, after all these years.
Yeah.
I don't know what my problem is. Like,
you know what's funny?
I'm not paying attention or something?
I've got the nerd
friends,
brain.
Yeah.
She's got the in-the-moment brain.
Say the same thing about me. It's how many times have I turned to them and said, what song is this? Because I'm like, it can't possibly still be Chuck Tuss Torture.
Right. Yeah, that's another one. Like, what jam are we on? Yeah. Shit, like, still
well,
Chuck Tuss.
Yeah. Now, I'm very much, and I think, Patria, you and I kind of lean the same way, whereas Kelly might be more nerdy about the set list and stuff
Definitely.
Like that. Whereas, I mean, you and I are there not just for a great Fish show, but also to be with friends and to be in that city and experience the city and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the show, both Callie and I are very focused. You know, you'll find us, we're like, usually seven to ten, like, people rows back. And we have our sunglasses on, and we're dancing really hard.
You got your nice shades on.
Don't night talk shades. To us. I know you like to throw around some high fives in the middle of a jam. Like, I look over and I'm like leaving you hanging. That's happened a number of times.
But those are those small hand high fives.
Tiny high fives.
They don't count. Those are like high fours, really. So what we're talking about is we're in a hotel. Above the, what's this, beer garden or whatever
this
it's called?
This is just a Chinatown hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Patria participated in the mermaid parade yesterday.
Yes, I did.
On Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands and thousands of mermaids. And from what I gathered by the photos, mermaids don't necessarily wear tops.
No. It's a lot of body paint. It's a lot of pasties.
And like contrary to, you know, my impression of like the Little Mermaid, for example, all mermaids wear clamshell bikinis.
Yeah.
These didn't.
There were a lot of clamshell bikinis, for sure.
I wore my clamshell tank top in solidarity.
Yeah. Did you wear it yesterday while you were sitting on the couch, not going to the mermaid parade? Good.
It was raining really hard.
Mermaids apparently don't like to get wet.
But I saw, from the few photos that I did see, it seemed like there were some boobs out.
Yeah, especially when you Google the mermaid parade, there's the boobs are the first ones to show up.
That's what it was.
And there's so many pervy photographers. Like, you start like body painting your friend, and it's like you've got a plate of French fries at the beach, and it's like, they just like swarm you. Like,
wait, hold on a second.
Pictures.
The metaphor. Plate of French fries at the beach, is that like what people want at the beach?
No, you know when you have a like plate of French fries and like all the seagulls show up at once squawk, and it's just, sorry, I didn't finish my metaphor.
I was thinking like every time I bring a plate of French fries, people just show up and grab them.
Some birds. Sorry.
No, but I was thinking like you know, being at the mermaid parade and seeing all these boobs advancing toward me, I think it'd be like one of those karma things where, you know, they're sort of like misrepresenting my request, so to speak. You know how like genies,
if you ask for
$1 million, they'll give you like a suitcase of $1 million and $1 bills dropped on your head.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you got your $1 million. Yeah. So I'd be like, I want to see, you know, lots of topless women, and suddenly I'm at this parade of mermaids, you know, just overwhelming me. But yeah. So I would run the other direction there. But
it's a lot of boobs.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a celebration of just total freaky expression. It's one of my favorite days of the year, worth flying from LA to just go march in the parade and obviously see you guys. But
so we should say Patria sprayed herself in orange.
I was not a mermaid, I was a merm perv.
And she,
I was perving,
she
all the merms
kind of looked
merm
like
perv in chief.
Looked a little bit like our commander in chief.
Yeah 45. I was I had a wig and some tiny hands, and I was bright orange from head to toe.
But it was a respectful portrayal.
Respectful diapering.
I was also wearing a big red, white, and blue diaper.
Looked like a loaded diaper.
It was, yeah, there's a lot in that diaper.
Anyway, in the back, not the front.
Anyway, we should go back. Patria, by the way, you are in this club, and I was trying to think who else is in this club, and it's a crazy club. I think you know what I'm about to talk about.
Yes, because
I saw your face sort of go into like the I'm checking out. It's songs that made it into Phish or even Tab, you know, became actual songs where they're about people. But I was thinking this has to be defined in certain ways. For example, Walls of the Cave is for my son Brody, but he's not explicitly mentioned in there.
Yeah.
So that's a different category than perhaps Wilson, which mentions explicitly our Trey's and my friends Raj and Pete. Raj and Pete the same. Mm. And also Looks Too Much Like Dave in McGrupp. That's our friend Dave Abrahams. And interestingly enough, Dave's parents, Gula is in Gula Papyrus, that's his mom, and Elihu is in Sample in a Jar. I wheeled around and saw you dancing with Elihu upon Lemur's bed. I wheeled around. And then, for example, Aaron Wolf is based on my friend Aaron Wolf, who was at Princeton Day School, whom I wrote Wilson with. So there's all this, you know, all these type of people. But I was thinking you fit into even, like, a slightly different category. So the Tab Band has a song called Night Speaks to a Woman, which is about my friend Helen, who is sort of like a kind of a secretive person, and the lyrics talk about, you know, a diary that she doesn't let me see kind of thing. But also she's like a risk taker. She's walking on a wire. She's got one foot on the fire.
I know a princess with one foot in the fire, two steps from the water's edge. She rides three sheets to the wind. Who is it? Is that I know a girl who's walking on a wire, balanced in the air-conditioned breeze that blows the wind. I'm telling you that I know.
There's another Tab song called Moesha. And you are Moesha, Patria. How did you become Moesha?
You know, I think just a dedication to fandom and dancing, so you know? I've been known to dance quite a lot.
You sure do, right.
Yeah.
And so you were recognized. Well,
thank you.
Quite well, yeah. So, you know, I'm asking you to hear your impression of it, but really... I know because I wrote the lyrics.
Yes, because you wrote it.
I wrote the lyrics.
Leaving Virginia with a throb of tequila still in my head from last night. My body is aching, but it's not what I was taking. It's a girl who was dancing in white. Moesha me left, Moesha me right, Moesha me wrong, Moesha me right, Moesha me day, Moesha me night, Moesha me read, Moesha me write. My truck's rolling too slow to make it up to Buffalo.
Yeah.
And really, here, let me actually bring up the lyrics because there's some important things you have to know about the lyrics. So, leaving Virginia with a throb of tequila still in my head from last night. My body is aching, but it's not what I was taking. It's the girl who is dancing in white. So, year 2000, my band Amphibian is in Norfolk, Virginia. And Patria was nice enough.
You don't smoke or drink, Norfolk, Norfolk.
What? That was either a pro or anti.
It's a joke my uncle told me a long time ago.
You were nice enough to come all the way down.
Yeah, we did that whole Amphibian tour.
Yeah, you were on tour.
And Big Frog was there, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and
nice,
I had just
a cool
come,
Japanese band.
Yeah, I just come from living in Japan.
Oh my God, right? You're right, yes.
So
I don't know if
like,
you want to talk about that, too.
Living in Japan?
Well, no.
Oh,
more
Japan
like a
tour?
No.
What?
A weird documentary I saw you in.
Oh, God.
Don't bring that up.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's funny.
That was amazing. Yeah. I just saw randomly.
Yeah, a lot of people saw that. It was like on 2020 or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Suddenly
and all
I saw
these
Patria.
People. Oh, so I got texts from around the world. Like, were you on 2020 last night? It's awful.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's I lived in Japan. I was a hostess, which is a job where you're basically, you make pleasant conversations with Japanese businessmen, you know, like, it sounds awful, but.
Well, why did Japanese businessmen want American hostesses?
You don't have to be American.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a lot of Aussies and Kiwis, and she was British. The girl who the 2020 was about, she, Lucy Blackman. Lucy Blackman. Anyway, she was doing this job and she went missing. And then was her body was found and she was killed.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what the investigation
was. Right, right.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So kind of heavy stuff.
You're making money over there as a, it's not, I don't want to say the word escort because that implies something
no,
else.
No, it's sort of like a Western, it's like a westernized geisha kind of thing. Like geishas are obviously very well trained and there's a lot of, regiment to it. And us, like, I mean, we were basically at the end of, so Japanese businessmen do like long business deals all day and then they go out to dinner and then after dinner, then they come to the club and it's super respectful. You just like sit next to them. You like sing karaoke with them, which I did not realize was part of the job. And being tone deaf, it's like incredibly painful to watch the videos of me singing karaoke. That was before I realized I was tone deaf. It's like so some really awful footage of me thinking I'm nailing it.
Nice. Right, on 2020, on national television.
Luckily, they cut that out.
Some of that didn't make it on.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, but there was, I saw
it. It was surprising to see you on there, though.
Yeah, there
so,
I was.
So you were there for the original Japanese meat stick and everything.
Yeah, was that the, oh yeah, did it start then? Because I was
it might have been
tour.
The second time they were in Japan that the meat stick came, I think.
How many times were they in Japan?
I think it was just twice. Just twice? Maybe. The Fuji Rock and then
Rock
Japan
and
then tour.
This one? Yeah. Japan tour was great. Japanese fish heads are the best.
Yes.
And that was who,
shout
Big
out
Fro-
Satoshi.
Satoshi, yes.
Yes.
Satoshi Yam on Twitter. He's funny. Is he the GIF guy? Is he the guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. So, all right. Long story about how Patria is Moesha. I remember Kelly, a little while ago, probably 3 weeks ago, when you consented to do this interview, you said, if we talk about Moesha, I want you to talk about the alternate lyrics. So I actually had to look them up. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I exactly know what you're speaking of, yeah.
Yeah, so
it was at a show at Red Rocks that Patria and I both were in attendance for.
Right, so it's the part that Trey likes to kind of go nuts.
You got the alternate lyrics?
I have some of the alternate
Tom.
Lyrics. Well, so the regular chorus goes, Moesha me left, Moesha me right, Moesha me wrong, Moesha me right, Moesha me day, Moesha me night, Moesha me read, Moesha me write. And of course, Trey, you know, we laughed incessantly at the silliest joke ever, and yet it became a song.
Yeah.
So then verse 2 was, my truck's moving too slow to make it up to Buffalo with more than a moment to spare. I know her friends are telling her that I'm very bad for her, but I don't mind as long as she's there. Kind of implying that there's probably more of a relationship than I, you know, than you knew that was
right,
happening.
Yeah.
It was in my head, right? So, and then we have Moesha me left, Moesha me right, Moesha me wrong, Moesha me right, Moesha me day, Moesha me right, night, Moesha me read, Moesha me right. So, basically the song continues, and then there's the part, sort of this part where Trey kind of ad-libs, and
right.
they became actual lyrics. So it starts again with the left, right, wrong, right, day, night, read, right, and then it goes, Moesha me up, Moesha me down, Moesha me over, under, and around, Moesha me lose, Moesha me win, Moesha me tumble, Moesha me spin, Moesha be less, Moesha me more, Moesha me scream, Moesha me roar, Moesha me future, Moesha me past, Moesha me first, Moesha me last. And it really keeps going. Dancing,
yeah.
Not, cold, hot, here, there, earth, air, blouse, shoes, win, lose, heart, soul, rock, roll.
Aww.
That's pretty cool. East, west, worst, best, and then up, down, over, under, and round, and then it goes back into its normal thing. So in a normal song, he'd have cycled through all those. The part that you're asking about, Kelly, is if you Google it, for whatever reason, Fishnet made a big deal that he changed
lyrics,
the lyrics,
yeah,
at Red Rocks in 7/18/2001. Moesha contained the following added lyrics. Moesha me down, Moesha me up, Moesha me avalanche, Moesha me cup. And I have no idea what that means. Now, Moesha me rocks, Moesha me red. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's...
Moesha me live, Moesha me dead. And then here's the part that people liked. Moesha me straight, Moesha me gay, Moesha me Jerry, Moesha me Trey.
Yay!
So I don't know what was on his mind then, but those are the alternate lyrics. Anyway, that was a long answer
to... Thank you for figuring out the answer to that question.
Yeah, I don't think I ever knew those lyrics.
Yeah.
That's a great song. We should bring that back.
I think the song needs to come back.
I don't know when it was, but I know it has been played
mm-hmm.
since
then.
This,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Debut
yeah.
era.
Hmm. Good stuff. So do you own Moesha, or are you embarrassed about being Moesha?
No, I own Moesha. Okay, good. I'm very honored.
You're totally Moesha.
Yes, yes.
And you, when was your first show, Patria?
My first show was Park City. What was the year that the Clifford Ball happened?
96.
Nice. Park City, 96. Did that whole tour.
Yeah.
With a caravan. We had, like, the taper, the weed guy, couple of hippie chicks that, like,
made
grilled cheese.
All the quintessential, like, fish characters.
Yeah, we had, exactly. We had all the archetypes. We had the hippie girls with, like, the hemp necklaces. And
what were you? You're the wide-eyed deer in the headlights.
Yes, definitely.
What is this band?
Yeah. And, we drove across the country, without cell phones. All four of us somehow managed to, like, stay together the whole way. We got lost in Chicago at some point. There wasn't a Chicago store. I don't know what show. I don't know why we were in Chicago. But, I remember, like, driving through, like, the Midwest, and you'd stop at the rest stations, and you'd just fill up with heads, and people would, like, start making grilled cheese. It'd, like, turn into, like, the lot. And people were cleaning themselves. I was, like, sleeping outside.
Yeah.
I slept under a car once.
Under a car?
Yeah. I started out pretty hardcore. Yeah.
So, under a car, like the car's your blanket.
Yeah. It just felt safer, because we were, like, sleeping at a gas station or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It was a long time ago. So I would never do that again.
All right. That's a good segue. Kelly, how about you, your first
show? My first show, I saw them as a part of Horde Tour when I was, like, a dumb high schooler, like, running around the lawn with my friends, not paying attention, not aware of fish in any way. They caught my attention when they did Purple Rain.
Ah.
Stopped me in my tracks. I took notice. Started listening to them over the following year. And then my first true fish show was Great Woods 94, where they did Gamehenge for the last time. I had no idea what was happening first set. Didn't know any of the songs, but I could tell everybody around me was losing their minds.
And Trey was narrating it, like, moving the
It started with, like, Nitrous into Kung into whatever. I didn't know anything that happened in the first set, but I could tell everybody around me was, like, seriously losing their shit. You have no idea what you just witnessed. And from that point on, I was sold. It was, like, life-changing.
Yeah.
Every cell in my body was vibrating. I got it after that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen you at hundreds of shows since then. And you too, Patria. We've had so much fun. Let's bring back, the Q in the Q&A.
Right. We have some of those. Hi, Tebow.
Oh, still beerless.
There's no beer in this fucking
town. Oh, my God. New York
and
City.
It's hot. I know. I'm telling you. I'm not kidding.
Okay, Tom, back to business.
Okay, back to business.
Is there a show you missed that you wish you had attended and think about today? Or when the band decides to, like, blow out a version of the song, is that something that they discuss?
Let's focus on that first thing.
Okay.
So is there a show I missed that I wish I had attended? And that sort of implies...
Yeah, like, how clued in are you if they... are going to have something up their sleeve.
Yeah, exactly. If they're going to do, like, some super special thing, do I know about it ahead of time? I think that's what that questioner is driving at. So I do remain unclued. I prefer to be clueless because otherwise I'd be a source for leaks. All my friends would hit me up for info. So I prefer to know nothing. But even when I do know, like, where New Year's is going to be, for example, or Halloween.
Like this year?
Yeah, exactly. I play dumb. Because, like, I couldn't give one friend preferential treatment over another, and eventually I'd be pegged. I'd be pegged as the source of the leak. In this day and age, you don't want to be a leaker.
You don't want to be a leaker.
Yeah, you get
in trouble. Knows where New Year's is.
I don't.
The FBI comes after you now, or worse. I don't know.
You just get fired.
So my friend Scott calls me, like, the worst insider ever. He says you're so not an insider that you're an outsider. But I'll take it, even though I might know a tiny bit more than I'm letting on. Does that answer that question?
In the only way you could answer that question.
Okay, good.
Yes. Then
why does it matter? Like, you'll find out and then you'll go
Well, I think you want to make plans.
No, we'll make
right.
plans.
You could save thousands.
I'm not a big planner.
You could say you're not a big planner. Literally, you could save thousands of dollars. I guess if you happen to know Fish's plans ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, you could book a hotel room,
right.
And
hotel,
it's cheaper.
I'm very grateful for the people that do know. And
you're welcome.
Yes,
yeah,
thank
and,
you.
And let
thank
you sleep in their
attention.
Room at no cost to you.
No, I pay.
I don't know.
No,
about
I
that.
Totally pay.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I get paid. I'm fun. For the most part. Actually, like, sometimes I just go to bed. And Kelly goes out. And
I don't.
Yeah, she just goes out. But sometimes, you know, like, if you're just in some random town, like, and it's, you know, you're like on tour and everybody's just like going to go sit in a hotel room and talk about the show, you know? Like,
check
just go to bed.
Yeah. I think what happens is, in the old days, I could happily sort of switch to a new kind of time zone sort of thing where, you know, you wake up at 2 p.m. and then you eat and then go to a Fish concert and then party all night.
Yeah.
But I tend to now need to stay on or my circadian rhythm will, is that a thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Explode.
Yeah, like, definitely.
You know, consume me from within.
Well, for instance, that Europe tour that we went on, we were in amazing cities, and I didn't see the city.
Did you see the zoo?
Sleep all day.
Right.
Yeah.
The weird thing about Europe is I was able to stay on the American schedule, right? Because, day became night, and it worked out okay. But you don't see the Roman Colosseum, for example. You just see the Roman nightclub after a Fish concert.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because the promoters seem to take us to some good spots.
Oh, really?
Yes, very much so. More questions?
Yes.
Yeah, Fatri and I met in Europe.
That's not a question.
No. That's a
statement of fact. Changing subject. Does the band ever make a conscious decision to blow out a particular version of a song before they take to stage, or do they just get extra wild as they're jamming out?
I've definitely seen where maybe a song where they haven't played it in a while and they decide they're going to revive it, so it's going to be a little bit of a bust out. And there's the very public rehearsal, which is called soundcheck, where people can hear them, and that inevitably leaks to everyone. But there's also a room in the back that has Fish instruments. Like a tiny little mini Fish concert can occur in the rehearsal room at every one of their shows that very few people are privy to. And I've sat in there, for example, for Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, being practiced and stuff like that. During the summer of covers, they would always do, in 98, they would always do the practice there to keep it off of a soundcheck stage. And that was fantastic. So I would say they would definitely do make an effort to blow out particular songs, you know, especially if it's a bust out or something unusual.
Okay.
Summer of Covers is a thing?
It is.
Summer of 98. They played a fresh thing every night.
They did a different cover every night, and it was phenomenal. And then they kind of
culminated.
Totally
there. Yeah. I didn't know it was a thing, though.
And it kind of culminated
Nerd
with, was it Terrapin? Was like sort of the...
Yeah,
the
Sabotage.
And then Terrapin the next night.
And Running with the Devil.
Yeah.
Ben
Wait,
Stealing.
What year are we talking?
Summer of 98. After Europe.
Yeah.
When it comes to stuff that you've put together and presented, is it ever outright said, like, no, not feeling that? Or does he then take it to the band and then they're, no, not feeling that? What are you even thinking bringing this to us?
Like, interesting.
The rejection process.
Right. Well, again, I think Trey and I do, we create entire songs. I don't think it's ever sort
Can
of
you
like...
You collaborate.
Yeah,
so,
I don't think it's like a question that like makes it to the band unless it's like a full song, and then whether they like it or not. It's not like we bring it in a partial state. Trey and I tend to like to write the songs completely. But as far as just me bringing stuff to him, the way that often works is, for example, our most recent songwriting session where Everything's Right was written, which is now on Tab Tour, that's about to be a Fish song. I also brought maybe another 15 songs that Trey definitely, and he has this categorical kind of mind where one of the first things that'll happen is I'll throw the lyrics sort of stapled you know, well-organized lyrics.
Stable to what?
Well, I sort of create a book. This time I brought a book of 17 lyrics, and they have like a blue title and then, you know, the black words, and I staple that, you know, page one, page two, I number the pages, and I just kind of throw it on the table. And Trey loves it, and because his mind works that way. He's organized. He shows up with 5, 6, 7 musical concepts. Mm-hmm. And I see his... He's trying right from the very beginning to match one to another. And so what will happen is, rather than like an outright rejection, there'll just be something that's skipped over. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He never will just have to point out, hey, Tom, by the way, that sucks. You know, that doesn't really happen. It's more just like we write songs. And another thing he does is he'll grab part of one song and part of another. That happened in this song, Leaves. So that the song completely changed from my impression of what it was about. It's sort of a slow, multi-part harmony song, sort of like a nature versus...
So when you write like multi-part harmonies, do you have Paige in mind for one part, Mike in mind, or Trey in mind?
Trey might. I don't. Okay. Trey might have that kind of thinking, like, this one's for Fishman, or this one's for Mike. I don't think that way. I'm just trying to get a song down. That's another thing, is that we have a limited number of tracks, and that's, so I want to make sure that we get the harmonies, because Trey wants to put, you know, bass and drums and some and keyboards and this, and before long there's 5 tracks leaving, if we only have 8, leaving only 3 for harmonies, and he hasn't done a guitar solo yet, so now that's only 2, right? So, and it limits us, because once those are filled up, we're done. And then we move on.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of thinking, and I have to, like, a little bit of politics, lobbying, like, this should be 3-part harmony. And he's like, well, I really could do a solo here, and then that would take track 5 away, you know. It's kind of funny. But it's very good to be limited.
Yeah.
Because if we had a 64 track, we would never leave that song. We would just make a perfect version of that song.
Well, that's good, because you're able to walk out with multiple versions or multiple songs instead of...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I get that.
Yep.
So you staple them to a book? Like,
that's the part you focused on. That's what you fixated on. Like, have you ever used a stapler?
Yeah, I like staplers, but
they,
you know,
like, hold paper together.
I know, but it just seems like it would then make the book like thicker. And
it's not really a book,
like...
so really it's just like sheets of paper.
Okay.
Create a book.
Oh, see, I was picturing a binder.
I saw a whole book there. Yeah. You know.
It seems like overkill. Why do you actually have to staple it? Once it's in a book, you don't need to staple.
Yeah, I was gonna get you like a glue stick for Christmas or something.
Thank you.
I like these questions. Who wrote these?
Fans.
Oh, nice.
And
Twitter fans.
Oh.
But the only problem is, this is still from the old batch, where I didn't attribute the question.
You didn't send us the new batch.
No, I did not.
No.
Right, so we don't have their names.
We don't have their names, so we can just say this one's from Bill from Ohio.
And this, we can say,
oh, are you kidding me?
I forgot, I had a bunch in my car, I ordered them one night.
Thank you. This is amazing.
The girls just received the old school,
they're
old
like
style motel keychain.
In the fashion of Twin Peaks, Special Agent Dale Cooper's room 315 key.
The keychain from like motels from, and it, this one happens to be from Bittersweet Motel.
Wow.
Halfway between Erie and Pittsburgh.
Look extremely excited.
I am like floored right now.
Awesome. Thank you.
I drunkenly one night bought a bunch of them because I thought they were so cool. Then the next day I was like, why do I have 10 of these? And
I'm going to add this to my keychain.
Yes. Yeah.
Tebow, this is fucking...
I like
awesome. Yeah,
I'm
going to
put it
that
in my tiny hands.
It's making a very loud podcast noise, so maybe we should
wait,
put it down.
Wait, turn my microphone.
Yeah, thank you.
He just got mad at you.
No, not mad, just angry. All right.
Much better.
Yeah. All right, let's hit it, girls.
Another question.
Yes.
I like this one. Do the lyrics start as a kernel and then develop into a cob over time? I just like it, you know? Or is there a conceptual idea story that you translate into graphical prose?
I'll often allow an idea to get me started, and that, I think, is what he's talking about, or she, about a kernel. That idea could be something I've been saving on a voice memo or on a notepad on my phone. Sometimes I'm walking. I walk a lot. I walk 4 to 5 miles a day, and every now and then the rhythm of walking gets me thinking of things, and I'll say it into my voice memo, and then when I get home, 1 out of 20 of those are awesome. And so then I'll sort of save that. Let that move from voice memo to notepad. And then, so when I sit down and I'm feeling like creative, I'll like kind of browse through my notepad ideas. And that's what will turn into a song often.
So the notepad.
Yeah, notepad is like notepad app on the Mac, which also is shared by the phone.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So like I'm out in the
it's not a piece of paper.
I'm out in the wild.
Stapling.
I'm out in the wild. There's no staple. Is that what was upsetting you? Like the potential for the notepad to have been stapled.
Physically, I just want to see. You know, like, was it the kind that you flip the paper over the top, like a yellow one? You know, or is it like, do you have like a, you know,
the binder kind?
Yeah, like with the spiral. You know, like do you open it up? Because I feel like the kind with the spirals can be kind of intimidating because there's like so much paper and you're like, okay, here I go, you know. Never mind.
Yeah, how am I ever going to fill this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess you got your big old iPad for that.
Is alcohol getting the better of us?
No. This is just me. This is, it's not, all yeah. Right. No, sorry.
Answering the important questions. Okay, so I recently discovered Trampled by Lambs. The album was a thing, and I don't know how I missed it.
You recently discovered something from 1997.
From 98. Was it 97? I think it was after 97, that. 98, I think it was like 2000 or something.
Well, I think it came out in 2000.
Yeah.
So Beth Fish employee extraordinaire, Beth Montori Rowles, put together a bunch of trays of my demos into an album, and that came out in 2000. And that
demos was sort from of, two different times?
It was possibly three different farmhouse sessions. Now, she was very involved with the rental of the farmhouses and the selection and everything. So she always felt like a deep personal connection to some of the songs that we came out. And these were the songs that eventually became
Ghost
and Farmhouse.
Yeah.
And along the way, we wrote a bunch of other songs and felt that we needed to sort of illuminate, sort of give a window into the writing process. And so, the original Velvet Sea, the original Ghost, the original Bug, the original, you know, and some crazy ones that will never become Fish songs, all are on
and
there.
If
there might be 30
songs.
Listen
to it, go out and listen to it because it is truly astounding and just brilliant and chillingly, like, just beautiful at the core. And you're hearing it from the ground up, and it's amazing. And I don't know why I've never heard it before.
Well, thank you. I think a lot of people are surprised that at the level that the songs are developed just by Trey and me. I think they thought that, you know, I'm a lyric guy, and so I gave the band lyrics and they write the song.
Yeah.
But really, they're kind of almost done by
music
the time.
On it. Yeah.
Yeah. They're done, and Trey and I come up with the harmonies, we come up with the instrument parts, everything.
And one of my favorite lyrics is on that song Blue and Shiny, which I have my nails done. You've crossed all the I's and you've dotted the T's.
Yes.
It's like your Monica's lyric writing, you know? I'm
right.
A sucker for the puns and wordplay and that type of stuff.
Silly puns.
When I
and
heard
songs.
That, I was like, that's fucking
and
brilliant.
Crossed all
the
eyes. And we've dotted the T's.
Yeah.
On the ocean so blue and shiny. Trey liked the line, I think a year. Then I take one off.
Yeah.
Meaning his mind is active 1 year and then the next year is on. No one understands that line, but.
That I'm alone when you're here.
I'm alone when you're here.
I don't know when you're near.
I don't know when you're near.
On the ocean so blue and shiny. And on the day when I lost my spine. and didn't tell you to walk that line. And now we've crossed all the I's.
Now we've crossed all the I's.
And we've dotted the T's.
And we've dotted the T's.
On the ocean so blue and shiny. I think a year then I take one off.
So we do actually, Bob Ludwig.
Is there more stuff
kind of,
like lurking in
well,
the vault
there is. There's,
that could
there's a
come
bunch.
Out?
Yeah. Okay. So I would say out of every writing session, we write maybe 10 songs and maybe 3 become fish songs. So there's like this wealth of stuff, but some of it is just like not listenable. Some of it is just joking stuff, but they all get assigned a name. And they all are an official song.
Documented.
And they're documented mm-hmm. in history and in the archives. And so Kevin hears them, Shapiro, mm-hmm. and other people hear them. And after a while, enough accumulate that Trey and I might have ignored the first time around that we go back and listen. And like I said, Trey's got this great memory for 20-year-old songs. So suddenly, we were at Bob Ludwig's studio, and I think he was mastering a Tab album, and Trey brought along a ton of cassettes, and he invited me because I wanted to see Bob Ludwig, the famous masterer of kind of, if you listen to rock and roll from any time from the 70s to the 90s, chances are it was mastered by Bob Ludwig. This guy's got the best ears in rock and roll, or did, you know, there's other people mastering now, but he's got this place in Maine, and he had these amazing speakers that were, he built his house around the bedrock, so the bedrock from the ground came up into his living room, and he mounted the speakers on the bedrock, so they're isolated from his house.
Hmm.
He was that particular about the sound. And he was telling us about mastering Frank Zappa and Paul McCartney, and he's got amazing stories. But anyway, Trey threw a bunch of cassettes at him, and he immediately made them sound from shitty to incredible. And we created this thing called Trampled by Lambs and Pecked by the Dove 2. And it's just sitting, you know, it's like a...
Sitting where?
I don't know where they really are. I mean, I have them on my iTunes, but I think they should come out.
I think they should.
I would like
support
them
that.
Yeah, all right. I'm gonna. Hey, Trey, if you're listening.
Trey.
It's time.
Hook it up.
What is it to
okay,
work
up? So when you attend a fish show, you're doing so as a fan of the music, but also as somebody who has written a lot of the lyrics and stuff. How does that sort of dichotomy feel when you're experiencing the show as a fan and also as a creator of the music?
That's an easy question for me.
Okay.
Because I'd almost, except for if I'm going to go on stage, I'm there as a fan, and I love being a fan. I love being in the audience as a fan. I'm like with my friends, family, seeing my favorite band. There's no chance of me these days being called up, so
yeah.
I'm just gonna experience the show.
You don't have that second.
Trey
aspect.
Said many times to me, he's like, "I'm sad. I'll never be able to go to a fish show."
You know what? I had a similar conversation with him, and I was like, I feel really bad for you that you don't get to experience like what you make us feel.
Right.
And he was like, are you kidding me? I'm feeling it 100 times more up on stage than you ever will.
Well, of course. Of course.
So
he said the adrenaline rush is like, he's like unbelievable. And I can attest to that just having been on stage.
Yeah.
I get a rush that lasts like 2 days. But my friends say I'm absolutely intolerable prior to like, you know, driving to the show that I'm going to do, the Proclaimer song, they probably heard, you know, and when I wake up, yeah, you know I want to be the man who wakes up next to you. Like over and over again in this stupid attempt at a Irish or Scottish accent.
Right.
Great job.
And, you know, totally, those guys have gotten over their nervousness probably 31 years ago.
So, like, you had Bruce Springsteen coming out.
But, oh, my God, Bruce Springsteen, so nervous. And the realization. Oh, God. Like,
okay.
The realization that a song that everyone out there knows that you now have to perform. And how many times have you heard Born to Run? 500? In your life?
Don't know. I haven't counted.
Way less
but
than 500.
No, but a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Even if it's 200, you've heard it a lot. I can't, I challenge you to come up with those lyrics. They're very difficult. Bruce is a wordy guy, and I just realized I don't know the song as well as I thought I did. And so I was, you know, I do the thing where I'm in the band room and I write out hints to the lyrics on pieces of paper. For my own self. And then I have, you know, Brad or whoever at the time to paste them on the monitors. So I can sort of get a little bit of a hint. I think now the band has iPads or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, we've all hit the 50 mark.
I know.
Hey.
That's when you're allowed to. Well, I'm saying we've all, meaning me and the four band members.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
No one in this room has hit that mark, apart from me.
I'll find you there.
Yeah. You just hold on. We'll get there.
All right. I'll wait.
Wow, I didn't realize. I mean, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean,
so who's running that?
I guess they go into something when they came back. That
makes sense.
I kind of prefer it's there if they need it.
Right.
It's not like they're reading off of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just saw someone do the Arlo Guthrie, coming into Los Angeles, bringing in a couple of keys. Don't touch my bags, if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Reading entirely off an iPad attached to his.
Not looking at the audience.
Not looking at the audience. Just looking at the iPad. It's like, dude, not going to work.
Yeah.
You won't become the next fish that way.
I'm not a musician or musically trained in any way, but it reminds me of, like, 10th grade when we had to memorize, like, Macbeth or Edgar Allan Poe and then recite it. Upon the Midnight Dreary, as I started weak and weary, as I pondered nearly knocking, forgotten, whatever. I just memorized the 20 lines I needed and spit them out as fast as I needed.
Was that the Raven?
Yeah.
It was the Raven.
Once upon a Midnight Dreary, as I pondered weak and weary. I'm blanking now because I'm thinking too hard. As soon as you walk out, 20 minutes later, it's going to be...
The very, very high pressure under the scales
part. It is.
You should call it under pressure.
Under pressure.
Under the pressure.
Under the pressure.
Well, you guys have been fantastic. I've taken a lot of your time up, and I love being in New York City with you guys, and I hope we can continue the party. But I think we'll probably turn the mic off at this point to get the party...
Really started.
Yeah. But thank you so much, and thanks for your wonderful questions. And So what happened was I sent Kelly and Patria probably 300 or 400 or maybe 500 audience questions, and they winnowed them down.
Kelly, 100.
Yeah. And they winnowed them down to about 100, and of those they asked me 20 or less. but they were very well selected. And I was very happy for the effort. And nice to see you guys again. So much fun. Thanks
nice
for inviting
to see
me.
You. Thank
and
you.
Anyway, thank you very much. See you guys next week on Under the Scales. Hey, thank you, Patria, Kelly, and Tebow, the on-air talent. And I also need to thank Mark Dowd and RJB for your behind-the-scenes help. A quick reminder to get tickets to the Anthony Crizon and Cal Kehoe show at the Iridium on Times Square. They'll play After the Fish concert on Tuesday, July 25th, www.theiridium.com. I'll be there as an audience member mainly. They're one of my favorite bands. Under the Scales will be back in August. Enjoy the Baker's Dozen.